Welcome to the Natural Health 365 podcast, natural solutions for everyday problems. Are you looking for natural health solutions? Visit naturalhealth365.com for a free subscription to our newsletter, free shows, plus some great gifts. And now, here's your host, Jonathan Landsman.
All right, thank you so much for joining us. Our show today, A Good Marriage, The Surprising Secret to Lasting Relationships. Some experts say that a good marriage has only about a 50% chance of lasting a lifetime. Is it really that bad? We know that a good percentage of millennials are putting off marriage, but that may have a lot to do with financial concerns or who knows what else. So the question remains, how can we create a lasting, loving, and successful marriage? And that's exactly what we'll talk about today. For me, good health is not just the mere absence of disease, and the same thing can be said about marriage. A good marriage is not just the absence of a divorce. No doubt, my wife has taught me how to be a better husband and a better man. Today on the Natural 365 podcast, we'll talk to a relationship expert about creating a successful marriage. Improving relationships is our goal in creating this podcast. So get ready to take some notes and share this podcast link with your family and friends. It's time to get real honest about relationships. So let's get started. Before we meet our special guest, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. And now, please join me in welcoming Mike Bundrum to our show. Mike, welcome.
Great to be here, Jonathan. I'm glad you invited me to come on board here.
It's a pleasure to have you, Mike. So I think probably it's going to sound a little strange to ask you this at the beginning, but as we'll learn later on in a few minutes, this has a lot to do with relationships. So I'm going to hit you with the first question. What is this thing, NLP? A lot of people kind of heard about it, but, you know, explain it, please.
Sure. NLP stands for neuro-linguistic programming, which I know that doesn't necessarily help for me to say neuro-linguistic programming, but it's essentially a communication skills model that was developed in California in the early 1970s at the University of Santa Cruz. And the basic idea behind NLP is what we call modeling, which is find somebody who does something really, really well, and then break down what they're doing into a process that can be taught to other people. So when it comes to communication skills or mind management and so forth, over the years, NLP has developed a tremendous array of specific skills that can be taught. And so in our context here, Jonathan, of marriage, NLP has a lot of tools that can be applied to improve communication skills and better a marriage.
You know, Mike, it just seems like such common sense. I hope it already makes a whole lot of sense to people. What I kind of thought about while you were talking is this whole idea that when I say it's common sense, it's a frequency vibration, right? I know that there are some speakers out there, or I should say coaches, that help people to speak better in the public, you know, for their business or whatever. Right. And they talk about how your voice should have like a melody to it, right? It should go up and down. It should be pleasant to listen to and entertaining, right? And why am I bringing all this up? Because I can't get over how many times, right? And man, Mike, was I guilty of this early on in my marriage, trying to get my wife to do things that I want, things I thought were so important, very self-absorbed, very egocentric. And the tone of my voice and just the whole energy of everything I was saying, on top of the words that I chose to say to her, what a destructive force that was compared to the way I am now, which is really just taking a lot of self-responsibility and going, hello, you know, listen carefully to what you're saying, because that has a lot to do with what your life is going to be like in the very near future. So, you know, I'm gonna be quiet now and just ask you, so what has this NLP got to do with relationships? Talk to us about your take on all this.
Well, I can identify with what you're saying, Jonathan, and I got to tell you, I went through the same thing. And I think a lot of guys do, a lot of people do, starting out, especially if you start out in your 20s or what have you, into a marriage where you don't have experience and you don't know what you don't know. And your entire life prior to that, you know, it's okay that it was, you know, essentially about you or what have you. But now you're in a relationship where there's an entirely other person with a different history, different traditions. Hopefully your values are similar, but there may be a lot of different opinions and desires and so forth. And you're in the mix with it, with this person, and they're point of view matters as much as yours does. And if you don't take that into consideration, which as a young egocentric man, I certainly didn't, it is going to cause very, very stressful conflict. And so, you know, marriage requires, it's sort of the ultimate test of maturity, I think. It requires that you grow up and be able to extend yourself to negotiate and take into account this other person and make sacrifices. And if you love this other person, however, the sacrifices won't hurt. You'll learn to find happiness in the fact that the other person is happy too. And it's this constant back and forth and balancing. And that requires consistent, mature, effective communication skills. When the communication stops or when it takes a turn into being really disrespectful, that's it. You know, you're in trouble.
Wow, that's really powerful stuff, Mike. It's so right on as well. I mean, I'm laughing inside when you were saying basically same values. You're right on about that, Mike. My wife and I have the same values deep, yeah, at a soul, at a core level, right? But early on, man, oh man, her point of view was so up against my point of view in my own mind. And what I'm talking about is I was not open at all to her point of view. And man, did I use my language strong, because it's just my own personality of black and white and being so self-absorbed. Boy, did I really let her have it. I mean, screaming, yeah, and yelling and countering every point. And, you know, this thing about trying to be right, right, right. But the bottom line is, very well said, Mike, not being open to her point of view. What a lousy thing to do, you know?
Well, yeah, and I would think that, you know, it's a lousy thing to do. That's true. And to the degree that I did it, absolutely. And at the same time, you know, there's a growth process that occurs when you realize that I need to grow up. I need to learn to take this other person's point of view into consideration, right? And that's the most important. That's the most important thing. If you're on that path, then you're probably going to be okay. Because, you know, one of the biggest mistakes that I think most of us make going into a relationship, going into a marriage, is that when our partner disagrees with us or thinks we're off or wrong or what have you, of course, we immediately get defensive, and then to defend our point of view. But there's another thing, too, which is somehow we think we have the right to try to convert the other person into our way of thinking. And we don't necessarily have that right. Somehow we think we have the right to require the other person to change to accommodate us. And nothing could be more misguided. Clearly, the most effective thing to do for me when my wife disagrees with me is to gather information. It's like, oh, you have a different point of view. I'm going to learn everything I can about that point of view. And I'm going to make sure I understand it, that I'm not assuming anything. And then clearly, once I've done that, then she's going to be more open to my point of view. And now we can actually negotiate. But if I start out defensive and under this assumption that I have the right to try to convert her to my point of view, and I haven't even taken the time to understand hers, that is a vicious cycle that is going nowhere fast.
No doubt, Mike. So bring it down to earth for us in terms of the NLP and how this can be applied to relationships. Give us some examples, please.
Sure. We have a model in NLP that's called perceptual positions. We teach it in our standard NLP practitioner training. And a real quick overview of the perceptual positions model suggests that people who are real flexible in their relationships, who have the ability to connect with and get along well with other people, they practice three points of view. The first point of view would be my own point of view, what I think, what I believe, my opinion. The second point of view would be a third party point of view. In other words, the ability to step back into kind of a neutral observer position and see my relationship as if from a distance. What would a good journalist with neutral integrity think about this relationship? Here's a man and a woman and they're relating. What insights from a neutral point of view might be applied? And then the third point of view would be my wife's point of view. Based on who she is, what I know of her and what she believes in her history and what she wants and her values, how is she perceiving me? What's it like to be in her skin right now? And then I can come back to my point of view. So among these three, what we call perceptual positions, it frees your mind to consider something other than your own point of view. And if you're a man in a relationship, you desperately need, most likely, to be able to consider something other than your own point of view.
Yeah, no doubt, Mike. I mean, I'm not an expert like you are in this whole thing and NLP, but married 27 years, I got to throw in my two cents as well and just say, you know, over time, I've realized, quite frankly, that my wife is right about certain things, right? Like, yeah. And I'm not putting myself down because I'm really good at stuff, which I'm not going to fill the airways with what I'm good with. But my point is, I'm really good at this point at certain things, and I'm just not really good at other things in terms of looking at things correctly. So it's like a partnership. You know, maybe it sounds a little too business-like, but for me, it just has made the relationship so much better. I see her as really great at certain things, and I better listen because it's good for both of us. And then there's other things where it's just like, hey, I know what I'm doing here, and I just kind of let her know this is what I think we ought to do. But the relationship is just so much better now. It's so much smoother because it's just that better understanding. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it makes perfect sense. It sounds very healthy because two people in a relationship are going to bring different skill sets, different experience, different levels of expertise, different aptitude for different things. And if you let your ego get in the way where you kind of have to be right or you have to hold the power no matter what, you're missing so many opportunities to function better as a team. And so that, to me, that team approach is really significant, because with my wife, if I see her as someone who doesn't take away from me, she's not a threat to me in any way, she actually is adding so much to me that I, in terms of what we can do and accomplish together, that I couldn't do on my own, then it actually is in my best interest and the best interest of the relationship for me to defer to her when and where appropriate, and so forth. So you're right. It's not about being self-deprecating where, oh, my wife is just right, period. No, it's about understanding, you know, who's good at what and having a working relationship around that. So I think I couldn't agree more, Jonathan.
I am so excited. This middle part of what we're about to talk about is so important. Men, listen up carefully. And I'm laughing because if the women are out there listening right now, grab your man right now. I mean, do it in a nice way. Don't grab him by the throat, but grab him and get him to listen to what we're about to say in the next few minutes. And if you want to improve a relationship, check out what we're going to talk about in the next minute or so. But first, I want to thank our sponsor, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. Mike, really cool stuff you were talking about just now. You know, just as a little quick side note, and then I want to talk about something that I'm going to leave it for you to explain, the key to happiness in a marriage, where you see that lies. And, you know, you'll explain it in just a moment. But I just wanted to stick in my two cents about, you know, being careful who you hang out with. And I'm talking directly to the men out there, because I'll be honest with you. I mean, it was a good friend, but there was a guy that I knew a long time ago who was a real bad influence in terms of, you know, I don't know how to put it except promoting the notion that, you know, men who listen to their wives, and I know it's going to sound silly, but overall, that was kind of the message, that if you really just listen to your wife and what she wants you to do, all of a sudden you were not a man, right? It was such an ego thing, and it kind of, on some sort of sick level, it made a little sense to me, right? And it actually stopped me from being able to listen. It was only when I really kind of just drifted away, we kind of just didn't talk to each other anymore. So, you know, what I'm trying to say is that it's really important to be careful who you're hanging out with, because I think that has a lot of influence, especially over the men, but even for the women out there. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there, Mike, for any comments you want to make. But also, please take a minute or so to talk about now what you feel is the key to happiness in a marriage. Get ready, men.
So I will comment briefly on what you said. I think it's a good point, and it's a matter of priorities in terms of who you're hanging out with. You know, I don't believe that my wife has to, you know, has carte blanche approval on my friendships. I do believe that to the degree my friendships have a negative impact on my marriage wins, because my marriage is the priority over friendships in my life. And there you have it. In terms of, you know, if you listen to your wife and so on and so forth, you're not a man. I actually think that comes from a place of male insecurity. If you're not secure enough to listen to your wife, then you're not as manly as you like to think. Because if your wife is that much of a threat to you, then you're a threatened guy. You are easily threatened, and there's no way around it. My wife, I listen to her no matter what. Do I always agree with her? No, I don't always agree with her. Do I always need her approval? No. Do I do things sometimes that she wishes I wouldn't do? Yes. It doesn't mean that we're always in agreement. There's negotiation that needs to occur. But if you are so insecure that you think listening to your wife is a problem, then you've got problems that you probably don't understand. Now, when we get into this sort of, it's a good segue into something really interesting about that men that I think men really need to know, which is in terms of men having power, men in relationships and marriage specifically, men have so much power in relationships. And I'd like to get really clear about what I mean by that. There was a study published in a journal of marriage and family that demonstrated that when a husband showed a higher level of positivity in a relationship, in other words, the better a husband is, that there was a lot less conflict and more happiness in the marriage. Well, that makes a lot of sense. But by the same token, the researchers discovered that it's in particular the husband's level of positivity that has the most dramatic impact on the relationship, more so than a wife's level of positivity. And so what that suggests is that if a husband is negative, and what I mean by that is not treating his wife well, is emotionally unavailable, is not communicative, not cooperative, he's not invested and engaged in the relationship, that has the most dramatic impact that can be had on a relationship. And so when I read this study, it jived so well with my experience as a former mental health counselor and as a coach, that in relationships where there's a problem and a couple is stuck and sort of can't move on, and so they need an outside perspective and so on and so forth, I got to tell you that the vast majority of the time, if I had to pick, and I don't have to, but if I had to pick who's to blame, I would say it's the man. Because women tend to be much more naturally gifted in relationships, tend to be more communicative, tend to be more emotionally available, tend to be better at negotiating and compromising. And that's not always the case. It absolutely is not always the case. But most of the time, in my experience, the guy needs a reality check. He needs to learn how to communicate. He needs to learn how to develop his emotions. He needs to learn how to be intimate. And I'm talking all levels of intimacy, including emotional intimacy. The guy really needs a wake-up call, and that's the truth. So that's my report for today on men in relationships.
Man, you're giving us a lot to do here, Mike. I don't, you know, this is a lot of work.
I tell you what, it's really not. It may seem like a lot of work. It does require effort, and it may push you out of your comfort zone, but it's in one sense, it's not a lot of work at all, because what's a lot of work is having a bad marriage. What's a lot of stress is having a bad marriage. A marriage is going to be, if you're a long-term relationship person and you're married, that's the centerpiece of your life. And when it's not good, there's not a way to avoid the stress. And other studies, which I can't cite right now, absolutely correlate stress in marriage with inflammation and disease and a shorter lifespan. Your marriage is not happy. There's research to suggest you're not going to live as long. It's super stressful. So when you say a lot of work, maybe it's going to require some effort on your part. But if you can do that as a man, your life is going to get so much easier and less stressful that it doesn't even seem like work.
No doubt. I can tell everybody right now, we're probably going to go over our normal 25, 30 minutes because I'm having so much fun. And I hope people that are listening to this show often realize that I was really just setting Mike up for that one. I absolutely agree, Mike, 100%. Everything you said was on the money. In my early marriage life, life was difficult. Nothing was working out well. It was absolutely a chore every single day. I could absolutely see where if I continued doing that after the first few years, my life would be shorter than I feel like it'll be now. My wife is my best friend. We get along so great. And I agree with you. It doesn't mean we agree with each other, but boy, have we worked out so many of those rough bumps in the road at the beginning of our marriage. And yeah, you're 100% right. You know, my background is in athletic training, and it's so funny the way you're talking. I tell people trying to get into shape, when you're out of shape, you're really struggling. The person who does the marathon in 4 or 5 hours, they're torturing themselves. The one who's doing sub-3 hours for a marathon, you're going, oh my God, they're running 6.5, 7-minute miles. And the really elite runners that are running 5, 5.5, 6-minute miles, oh my God, that's insane. They're working so hard. Not really. When they're done with a race, they get a little banana, they eat a little something, they can talk, they're fine, they're not crippled for a week or two afterwards. I mean, you know, it's a whole other ball game, and it's the same thing with what we're talking about here. Learn to have a better relationship, and oh my God, my business life has gotten so much better. My relationships with other people have gotten better. My relationship with myself has gotten better. It just feels good all the way around. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. The trained marathon runner is, I mean, it's an unbelievable accomplishment. And they're cruising though, right? I mean, They're making it look easy. And you asked me to run a marathon with no training, and you know, even walking 26 miles or what have you is going to seem impossible. So the metaphor absolutely applies. It may seem, if you have to sit down and really truly consider your wife's point of view without just automatically reacting, try to put her in her place or what have you, but really listen and pay attention to what she must be feeling and how you feel. I mean, that could be a whole world apart from where you live. And so going there might be really difficult at first. But, you know, hey, you want a great marriage? Then you've got to train for it, right? You want the results? Then you have to do what's required to get those results. And that may be something very, very different than you're used to doing. Okay, you got to begin though.
So let's begin maybe for a couple minutes before we take another little quick break here. Improving a relationship. Maybe you've got a little short shopping list you can kind of go through with us.
Yeah, I think I can give you a short shopping list. If we go back to that perceptual positions model and we look at my position, a neutral party position, and and the other's position. In my position, it's really understanding what do I think and what do I feel. And so many, we sort of stay focused on men here for a minute. So many men don't know what they feel. And so they just sort of feel a tension and they get defensive and they react. But for example, if my wife says something to me that it disagrees with me, it sort of cuts me the wrong way, I'll just get this, you know, tension and I'll get angry at her. Rather than take a moment and just digesting what she's saying and realizing it hurts my feelings, or I'm disappointed, or I'm jealous, or I'm whatever it is, that I'm worried, or whatever, just really knowing what I feel, and then rather than coming back and attacking her, just being honest about my response to that. So knowing what you feel and being able to share it in a way that doesn't attack or blame or accuse the other person. I mean, you know what? Just that alone, forget everything else. just that alone has power to transform a relationship.
I had a spiritual mentor who changed my life completely when it came to my relationships. And it was, for me, it was anger issues. It was always like what you said, that trigger of my wife would say something and, you know, it almost didn't even matter what she said. And all of a sudden I got angry. And the whole point that opened me up and calmed me the you-know-what down was just the idea that anger was such a self-centered thing. I was like, whoa, this is an ugly thing. I don't want to be like this anymore. I've got to get away from this as soon as possible. And it really motivated me to, at the very least, like an athlete, you know, shut this down. This program's not working for me. Toss it out the window. I never want to look at it again. Now I'm going to be different. And number one was to not be angry anymore to my best friend.
Absolutely. For a lot of us, that absolutely should be a priority. Get that reactivity. And the thing about anger, which is really interesting, it's what we call a secondary emotion. It's usually a response to being hurt. However, we're so quick to react that we don't experience the hurt. We just experience the anger. So my wife says something to me that hurts my feelings. What I am probably going to experience, if I'm not really self-aware in terms of my emotion, I'm probably just going to experience the anger and the threat and the reaction and retaliation without realizing that it hurt my feelings, or I'm scared, or I'm worried, or what have you. And for a lot of guys who are tough guys, is sort of like, hey, guess what? You have to be a little vulnerable. You don't have to be bulletproof. You know, you're imperfect. You have a vulnerable side, and it takes a really strong guy to be in touch with his vulnerable side and to trust somebody with it. But that's the deal. You want to get rid of anger in your relationships. You want to stop all the conflict. You want to work with your wife as a team. Then this is what you have to do. This is what you have. You got to know your feelings. So your point is perfect, Jonathan, in that the anger almost never serves a useful purpose in a relationship. And the good news about that is the anger is usually about something else you're feeling. That's probably a more vulnerable feeling, like you're hurt. So, you know, become aware of your emotions. Next on the short list would be that third position, taking a neutral point of view. Whenever you're stuck, go there. That's where you think about the big picture. It's like, what's important to me? What's really going on here? That's where you can ask the bigger questions. How can these two people both get what they want? What's the big picture? Learn to see that big picture rather than just being caught up in this reactive process where the only point of view, you have this narrow perspective. And then third on the list is to develop some empathy and compassion and connection with your wife, if you're a guy. You have to be able to see her point of view. And again, a lot of guys aren't strong enough to handle this, because the idea that they could be wrong about something, or that there's some point of view that that doesn't agree with their own, it's a threat to them, and that comes from insecurity. So be secure enough, be strong enough to take into consideration your wife's point of view. And don't just think about these things, do them, and actually take a few minutes and go, I'm going to pretend I'm my wife now, looking back at me, and I'm going to imagine how she's feeling and what she's thinking based on what I know of her. In other words, make it an intentional process in your mind so that you actually do get a different point of view.
Right on, Mike. You know, and for those guys out there who might be losing it a little bit, not tracking everything, let me tell you, you're going to be happier, you're going to be healthier. And you know what? You're probably going to make a whole lot more money if you listen to your wife's perspective a little bit more. I'm going to be honest with you. Those are three things I've experienced in my life from marriage year one to marriage, 27 years into it. I got to tell you, it's been a heck of a ride, and I'm so excited about the next 27 years. We're going to talk about a lot of other things towards the end here as we finish up the podcast. We're going to talk about an interesting point of whether you should decide whether a relationship is worth it or not. We're going to get into that a little bit. And then some of the things that are missing from common relationship education. It's going to be two very interesting things we're going to cover to close out this show. But finally, I want to thank our sponsor one last time, Livon Labs, makers of the highest quality nutritional supplements on the market. The difference is in the delivery system. To learn more, visit livonlabs.com. That's livonlabs.com. Okay, Mike, so what do you suggest for people looking to decide if a relationship is really worth it to commit to or not? This should be interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I think there is a sort of embedded in a typical process of starting and forming a relationship. I think all of us can get so much better at this. First of all, if you're trying to decide if a relationship is worth it or not, is to know where you are in the process. In other words, a lot of the time where we're trying to decide whether a relationship is worth it, it's not the appropriate time. In other words, it may be really early. Let's talk about when, you know, you're dating and so forth. You're trying to decide, is this relationship worth it? I don't know. And you're probably at a time when it's impossible to know. I think a lot of people, when they meet someone and start dating, they dive deep way too quickly as opposed to forming a friendship. And it's like I meet someone, I go on a date. Within a couple of hours, I'm telling them about my past, my childhood, my past relationships. And that's too much, too fast. And you're trying, out of probably loneliness or desperation, you're trying to form a bond with another person too quickly, and you end up overly invested in this connection with someone who is a complete stranger to you, really. So, you know, form a friendship. Hang around with someone as friends for a few weeks or months before you decide we are exclusive dating partners. And then when you become dating partners, don't be in a rush. I mean, there are levels of compatibility. Do you share similar values? Do you share similar dreams? Are your communication styles compatible? Do you want the same things out of life? And so on and so forth. And it takes quite a while being in an exclusive relationship with someone to make sure all that's going to work. And so say you're a year and a half, 2 years into it, and you're going, okay, now I decide whether or not this is worth the long-term commitment, and then you're actually in a position where you can address that question, and it should be along the lines of, you know, assuming that you're interested in a marriage or a long-term relationship, it should be along the lines of what you've learned. You've got the information on the table. Are our values aligned? Is what we want out of life aligned? If we stay together, for example, and end up retired, do we have the same vision for what we want to do in retirement? I mean, are we aligned in what we want and what we believe is important? And do our communication styles, although they may not be the same, are they compatible with each other? And to me, a really good measure of a successful relationship that's worth committing to, you know, again, assuming you love this person, is how easy is it? How easy is it? In other words, relationships can be, they get easier as you go along. My relationship in its second decade is so much easier than it was during the first decade, especially during the first 5 years. But at the same time, if the relationship is a constant stress for you, you have to take a look at that. And so I really like to ask the question, are you having fun? Is it easy? Does the love you have for this person, is it something that you get to live in a good portion of the time? And, you know, these are all questions to evaluate, but the question is, are you really in a position to be evaluating a long-term relationship? And I find it so common that people are like, yeah, I've been dating this person for 2 months and we're trying to decide whether or not we have something long-term. It's like, well, why are you asking this question right now? Because you're talking about spending 20, 30, 40 years together. You've literally known each other 2 months. You don't know who you are yet. It's not time to ask that question.
Very important points, Mike. And also, you know, let's say the obvious here for the women out there. You know, girls are thinking different than boys, right? And you know what I'm going to say when it comes to sex. You know, that a lot of times is coming up way too soon, right? The sex is given by the woman, let's say, and more. And I know this is general, but, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. You're the relationship expert. You know, the woman's, you know, coming from a place of emotionally really being invested and having sex. And the man is just, hey, this is great. You know, we're having sex. Yep. And that's it. You know, that's my point. They're not thinking about it like a woman would. So it's almost like, you know, I know it sounds weird, but from a man's perspective, it's almost like a message now I'm giving to the women. Hey, you know what? Hold back a little bit. And like you say, are you having fun? Are there other things going on that are really terrific in that relationship? Or is it the most important thing to the guy to have sex on the first, second, or third date? I mean, come on. What do you really know about each other, right?
Exactly. And here's the issue with that, with having sex too early, which is the act itself forms a really powerful bond between two people. And I know it's possible you can go have a one-night stand, never see the other person again, and not really be affected by it. But in the context of dating where we are considering a relationship, that I think you should put off sex for as long as you can, and so that sex becomes an expression of the love that you've developed for each other as people. Because what happens, again, in this context where, hey, I've met this person, we're going to date, and we're going to see about dating a few more times, you introduce sex too early in the relationship, and there's a biological bond there that happens that's confusing to the relationship. Suddenly now we've shared this really intimate thing, and the expectations of the relationship become so ramped up that the expectations become so much higher than they should be that they're hard to meet. And so a woman meets a man, they have sex too early, and the next day she's expecting a phone call. She's expecting, look what I've given here, and I did this because I want you to love me and I want to sort of speed things up and create this bond. The guy's not ready for that kind of bond, but he kind of is not surprised at the expectation. And now it's confusing. You've introduced something very emotional that the relationship is not ready to handle yet. And it's not a good idea. And this is not reflective of any particular set of values about sex. Again, people go out and have one-night stands all the time, and but that's not, they're not expecting anything, you know, other than that. If the context is, I'm interested in a long-term relationship, I would absolutely keep it simple, keep sex out of the equation for as long as possible until you believe you love the person and you've expressed your love for each other. And now the relationship is at a place where it can handle the elevated expectation that the sexual bond brings into the mix.
Yeah, I mean, Mike, that's so right on, exactly the point. The love, or I don't know if that's the right word or not, but that's right. That relationship is there, bottom line based on so many other, or maybe just a few, extremely valuable things that have nothing to do with sex. That's the thing. And that it's there reliable and securely for both parties, right? The man and the woman, it's like a done deal. You get it. And then, like you say, sex comes into the play, if you will, no pun intended, but sex comes into it later as just an addition, but there's no insecurity there. That's saying a lot. I know I sound like a super conservative, but the older I get, you know, the more conservative I get about these things, and boy, do I see all the mistakes out there that are happening. So again, we went way beyond what I normally do for a podcast, Mike, but I just absolutely love this conversation. I think it's one of the key things for health, which is why I think we probably went on the longest out of any of the podcasts I created. But what do you think, as we close out for the last couple minutes or so, what do you think is the missing thing when it comes to common relationship education? Talk to us.
Well, honestly, I think the missing thing is relationship education itself, right? Here's what I think. If people had the awareness that having a relationship is really dependent on skills, communication skills that are not commonly taught. In other words, you have to learn how, and learn intentionally, how to communicate in a way that makes your relationship work. You have to learn about communication styles and how your specific communication style might differ from your spouse's communication style. And then you have to learn how to specifically how to accommodate her communication style so that you can be better understood and that you can better understand her, in that it's relationships, in my view, are not meant to just work. And to some degree, you know, thank goodness they do just work. But if you're striving for happiness and functionality and to have a really great relationship, the average person simply doesn't possess the communication skills to do that without actually going and learning specific relationship communication skills. And so the missing piece is this awareness that if I'm going to really do this right, it has to be a project where I devote time and effort and energy into educating myself about how relationships work and how to communicate in a way that I avoid all the common catastrophes that happen in relationships. It shouldn't just come naturally. And I think that's the expectation. Well, we're married now, and so we're going to live happily ever after. And, you know, the expectation is that this works. We're compatible. It works. No, that's not it. That's a recipe for disaster. You have to take on, as a separate project, an opportunity to educate yourself and develop communication skills.
Wow. I hope this motivated a lot of people to step up their game, because as I said at the beginning, I really believe this with all my heart. This is probably one of the most important things you'll do. And nobody could say that I don't believe food, supplements, you know, any kind of exercise, all these lifestyle things. I spend a tremendous amount of time with our writers producing all these podcasts. How important that is for someone's health. But wow, relationships, I put that right at the top of the list. And yes, food, taking care of your health. If you're not healthy, it's kind of tough to have a really good, healthy relationship. If sickness is there, you got to take that out of the equation. But boy, relationships make it a priority. For those who want more information about Mike and his work, go check out INLPcenter.org. We'll have a link on our podcast page. Mike, we went way over. I keep saying it, but boy, did I have a good time. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks again for having me, Jonathan.
The show was brought to you by NaturalHealth365.com. Are you looking for natural health solutions? Visit NaturalHealth365.com for a free subscription to our newsletter, free shows, plus some great gifts. Thank you for listening, and be sure to join us next week for another great show.